Waldorf in 3D, Lecture 5, Culmination and Curriculum, Part 1. A number of years ago, the popular financial consultant and advisor Clark Howard was asked to visit a middle school class in a public school and to impart some financial wisdom to the children. So the first thing he did was to say to the children, "What makes a person rich? Tell me what you think and I'll write it on the board." So the children called out, "Your own private jet." Okay, good. He wrote that down. "A yacht." He wrote that down. "A multi-million dollar house." Fine. Wrote that down. "A lot of clothing." Wrote that down. "Big cars, a lot of them." Wrote that down. And on it went, as you might imagine. And when they were done with their long list of these material possessions, at the top of the list, he had left some space, and he surprised the children by not writing the word rich at the top, but by telling them, "You know what? Every one of these items, every single one of them, makes a person poor. You know, you have a yacht, you need a crew. You need to constantly maintain it because it gets hit with storms and it's in salt water all the time. And what about all the fuel you're using all the time? Your own plane? Talk about fuel. You need a crew. You need a very skilled crew because you're putting your life in their hands. You need to pay fees to the airports. You need to pay a lot of money to a lot of people on all of these things. They're all very, very expensive. And if you have $1 million, by the time you're done with all these items, you probably owe much more money than you have. So let's look at what makes a person rich." And then he began speaking about number one, hard work, and number two, wise investments, and on he went. Now, let me transpose that session and imagine that I am a Clark Howard type, and I've been asked to speak before a group of Waldorf teacher trainees about what makes a really good teacher. So, in the style of Clark Howard, I begin by saying, what makes for Waldorf teacher enrichment? Please let me know what you think and I'll write it on the board. And among the answers I get are DEI credentials, an MA degree, training in nonviolent conversation, credentials in literacy, a PhD in education, cyber civics credentials, and the list goes on. And in the style of Clark Howard, in the space I left at the top of the blackboard, I write, "Impoverishing Waldorf teachers." What? Yes, number one, most of these things that are mentioned cost money, tuitions. In fact, master's programs are notoriously lucrative for the training centers that have them. That's a major reason that they were ever brought in the first place. They take time. Not only the time that you need to go to the courses, the time you need to write your essays or bring other documents or projects that will help qualify you for those credentials, and the time that you are spending in your classroom directing your lessons in such a way that you're going to be able to write reports about them to show that you qualify for these credentials on a practical basis, and so on. I could say for the most part, none of those credentials that I have mentioned, I'll say them again, DEI credentials, master's degree, nonviolent conversation, road to literacy, cyber civics, PhD, not one of those is guaranteed to make you a better teacher. You may be getting technical help from them. You may be getting some food for thought. But none of it is going to improve your relationship with your children, your relationship with your parents, and above all, not one of them is going to increase the love and devotion that you have for teaching altogether and for the children in your class in particular. Why are all of these things out there then, and why are people going to them? Because there is a vacuum, a tangible, perceptible vacuum in the Waldorf school of today, private as well as public. Something is missing, and into that vacuum, nature abhors a vacuum, so something rushes to fill it, and all of these new qualifications and new improvements to your teaching come up. But the reality is, what is really missing is something that is non-tangible, non-visible, and at least in the modern sense of the word, really non-degreeable. It is the connection, the living connection to anthroposophy, to, we might say, the primal, the prototypical Waldorf curriculum and the primal, prototypical Waldorf culture. That is not to be found in this great paper chase. And it is a pity that every year, though some of these programs like nonviolent communication have fallen out of favor and are not as well attended as they used to be, but by and large, every year, there's one or two new ones added to the list. And there certainly are individuals who probably have credentials in three or four of those that I've named, and a master's degree here and there, though much more rarely, a doctoral degree as well. Let's ponder for a moment where those degrees come from. Bachelor's degree, master's degree, doctoral degree. Where do they originate? They go back to the medieval European universities. And let's remember the likelihood that many of us were incarnated during the Middle Ages and very possibly in Europe where these universities arose. But even those universities were being somewhat derivative. They were, we might say, bringing in a public way something from the ancient mysteries, the ancient initiation ceremonies that we may or may not have been part of in an incarnation that we might have had in ancient Egypt, in ancient Persia, in ancient Greece. In those mystery centers, a degree meant that one had gone through certain trials and had proven oneself capable of inwardizing what at first had to be outer proscriptions on one's behavior. So, for example, the bachelor's degree. That meant that the student in the initiation center had taken a pledge to not marry or have a relationship with anyone of the opposite sex, which basically meant women in that time. So you were a bachelor's. Have you ever wondered where that term came from, why you're a bachelor when you finish undergraduate work? It meant that you were willing to hold back your procreative forces, your sexual forces, knowing that would build a foundation for spiritual attainment. It wasn't something that was necessarily going to be permanent, but it was something that for a period of several years, under the guidance of and the supervision of those who were degrees ahead of you, you would give up that possibility and remain celibate. When you had done that, then you were worthy of a bachelor's degree. The next step was to show that without that kind of external help and supervision, and perhaps being scolded now and then by those beyond you, out of yourself, out of your own forces, you were able to continue mastering those forces of celibacy, mastering them. Now you had mastered some of your impulses, and out of yourself were your own supervisor. That's where the term master's degree comes from. What about doctoral degree? When you were able to take those forces that you had held back and transformed into new forces of soul and spirit, that in a way were truly creative forces, that you might be a poet or a painter or a creator of musical pieces, you now out of yourself could create. Those creative forces could go out into the world, whereas the bachelor and the master remained pretty close to the mystery center, so that they could be helped or reminded of their task if need be. Now you could go out a free individual and heal. Not only heal the physical ailments of individuals, but also the soul elements, that you are a physician, a psychiatrist, an obstetrician, whatever might be needed. Those healing forces could work in social situations, in creative, artistic situations, in educational situations. So that's where the doctor's degree comes. So these degrees really had meaning and really took work, tremendous effort, and indeed, most individuals could not go far beyond the bachelor's degree. Very few individuals made it to the point of mastery, and far fewer to the point of being a doctor. The doctor had tremendous meaning then. And I don't have to tell you that that kind of meaning and significance is not there anymore. But we should recognize that if it is possible for an individual today to go through a modern initiation, in the rich, robust, broad sense that Rudolf Steiner describes in thousands of his lectures, to go through that, one can actually have, we might say, an inner bachelor's degree. And I would say that's possible for a class teacher to attain after staying with a class for 8 years. One has a kind of Waldorf equivalent of a bachelor's degree. For a class teacher who can go through twice 2 8-year periods, going through it seriously, working hard, struggling, doing his own research, and not just taking prefabricated modular lessons and giving that back to his children, 2 times through, that can indeed be the equivalent of an inner Waldorf master's degree. And for anyone who can go through 3 times and some through 4, there you have the possibility of the inner Waldorf doctoral degree. That's a way of doing it, which I would say is probably going to mean a lot more to you as an individual, to the Waldorf movement, to the world, because when you're able to do that and you do it with earnestness, not just kind of holding place for all those years, but you're really making it part of your path and working meditatively and contemplatively, and certainly going back again and again to all that Steiner can give, the teacher and the anthroposophist all together, then you are going on a path of modern initiation. And this was certainly one of the intentions that Rudolf Steiner had in his creation of all of the daughter movements, that the biodynamic farmer, the anthroposophical physician, the Christian community priest, all of these daughter movements were modern paths of initiation in life itself, not requiring attendance at a mystery center or an ashram, but rather being able to do it in the give and take, everyday, mundane world. And this is what is missing, if for no other reason than what I mentioned in an earlier lecture in this course, that it's very hard for a teacher who wants to go for 8 years to go through the 8 years. The class teacher's task has been fragmented, broken up. And with this, the class teacher as an institution, the class teacher as, I would say, the heart of the culture of the Waldorf School, has been weakened. And out of that weakness, out of that vitiation, comes the opposite of initiation, where the class teacher is no longer the central force, the central organ of perception of the Waldorf School. OSNA should be supporting and strengthening teachers' enrichment, their ability out of anthroposophy to find a path which will benefit not only them, but their children and their parents and the school and Waldorf education altogether. But OSNA, at least in its present leadership and in the leadership it's had for some time now, has no capacity for offering that kind of guidance. And so, as a distraction, one gets the patchwork, the cosmetic surgery that is turning Waldorf education more and more into every other kind of education, whatever is there in the, you know, National Association of Independent Schools, that sort of thing. What they're doing, Waldorf is going to be doing. And instead of becoming a modern mystery center, the Waldorf School becomes just another private school. We'll go on.